Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 10, 2014. Heads of states are gathered in Addis Ababa to talk about South Sudan. The outgoing head of United Nations mission in South Sudan travels to Malakal to open a new IDP camp, and she has some strong words for the two leaders.
When they have tried to trust that now the stability is here, again a town is retaken, again it's retaken, they don't really trust that this is not going to happen again. So until they see complete peace over a long stretch of time, it seems that they don't really feel that they are safe.
And the SPLM acknowledges there is more than a little corruption and more than a few defections.
It's not SPLM alone. This corruption, it is from down to up. How many people have you found not SPLM but as corrupt as anything?
We have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Heads of states from the IGAD, from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, are meeting in Addis Ababa today to talk about how to end the violence in South Sudan. Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will meet on the sidelines to try to resolve the country's conflict. Their meeting comes a month after the two leaders signed a ceasefire agreement, but sporadic fighting continues. Marial tells reporter Peter Clody it is the rebels who violated the agreement.
As you remember, on the 9th of May, His Excellency President Salva Kiir Mayardit had a meeting with the rebel leader Dr. Riek Machar in Addis, and they signed a recommitment to cessation of hostilities. And in that recommitment, cessation of hostilities, it was also indicated that they can also meet after 1 month. So today it is 1 month since the cessation of hostilities was signed on the 9th of May.
The president is also expected to attend the heads of state and government meeting in Addis Ababa to look at security issues not only in South Sudan but in the sub-region. How will this play, especially knowing that the problems at his backyard have still yet to be resolved following clashes or the ongoing conflict?
Well, as you know, the fact that we have a rebellion in our hands does not remove the responsibility of the elected democratic government of the Republic of South Sudan to play its role in the other African problems. So he has to continue doing his normal responsibilities while at the same time cooperate with the IGAD countries and others to resolve our backyard problem.
South Sudan has not particularly been pleased with the meeting of President Uhuru Kenyatta and the so-called red carpet treatment that President Kenyatta gave to rebel leader, as well as the news conference that was held in neighboring Sudan recently. Doesn't this look like not a confident building measure from your government, suspecting these countries of trying to undermine the legitimate government in Juba?
Of course, those are media speculations which are always exaggerated beyond the real reality of the situation on the ground. I can assure you that South Sudan has the confidence, whether of the ability of President Uhuru and his government to continue doing the best they can in order to bring peace to the Republic of South Sudan, and especially to also tell the rebels that they must come to the table and be realistic to recognize that there is an elected democratic government. As for Sudan, I can assure you our relations are improving every day. There is no question about that. Of course, what our message when it goes out to everybody else, including region and internationally, is that an elected democratic government cannot be equated with the rebel movement. That is our concern. But I can assure you we have the confidence of those countries, especially the IGAD countries, including the Sudan and Kenya and Ethiopia and the rest of them, in trying to resolve the issues through the IGAD forum.
While Marial claims it is the rebels who continue to fight, both sides have been accused of attacking the other side after the cessation of hostility agreement was signed. Two top officials from the U.S. State Department are attending the IGAD Head of State Summit. They are Chancellor of the State Department, Thomas Shannon, who advises U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry on major foreign policy problems, and the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Ambassador Donald Booth. Both men were in Juba this weekend, where Shannon said he was given assurances by both President Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar that they will hold a second round of face-to-face talks in Addis Ababa. Meanwhile, as regional leaders gather in Addis Ababa for the IGAD summit, 14 African elder statements, including former heads of state and government and Nobel Peace Prize winner Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa, have penned an angry letter to Mr. Kiir and Machar. In the letter, the leaders from across Africa say they will no longer stand by and watch as humanitarian tragedy unfolds in South Sudan. The leaders chide President Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar for allowing war to wipe out any hopes that South Sudanese had for enjoying peace and prosperity after the country became independent less than 3 years ago, and demand an immediate end to the violence. They called on Mr. Kiir and Machar to follow the footsteps of great African leaders before them and work toward inclusive peace for their young country. The letter ends with a stark warning to the two rivals in the six-month-old conflict in South Sudan. It says, quote, "The fate of South Sudanese children who have been affected by unimaginable violation, including killings, forced recruitment, rape, and abductions, is in your hands," unquote. You can see a copy of the letter and who signed it on the South Sudan in Focus Facebook page. After several rounds of fierce fighting between government forces and rebels of the SPLM in opposition over the control of Malakal town, hundreds of residents say they are too afraid to return, despite assurances from Upper Nile state authorities that they will be protected. Residents taking refuge at the UN compound say they have witnessed inhuman treatment by both rebels and government troops, including skirmishes. Mungume Debs Rakaringe was in Malakal and has this report.
61-year-old Matthew Chol Jok worked as a director general for sanitation and environment in Upper Nile State before fighting broke out earlier this year. He says his town was vibrant and people were engaged in all different lines of work. But for the last 5 months, Jok has been holed up in the UN protection site.
It is quite impossible to go to the town to go and see my house. I cannot step 3 steps at the main gate to go out. I can be killed.
Jok says when the fighting over the control of Malakal town erupted, he was forced to abandon his job, leave all his possessions behind, and run for his life. He says he has no idea where his family members are at this point.
I'm a man of a very large family, a very big family. I could say sorry, because some of my children, I did not know where they are now. Here I'm hearing that some went to Ethiopia, and some went to Khartoum, and some are in Juba. Some of my children were abroad. They arrived the second day of the crisis. All of them are caught, and where they are now are not known.
He fears his children could have been killed in Juba in the aftermath of the fighting, which began December 15th within the presidential guard. Now, Jok and other Malakai residents live under what the UN calls unbearable conditions. Veronica Chan is another internally displaced person who trudges through the mud in this camp. Chan lives with her 6 children and her husband in a small muddy house. She says life at the camp is difficult, but at least she and her family are alive.
My house was totally burnt down. I don't even have any neighbors to live with. I cannot go back.
Chan is worried about the future of her children. She says the UN camp is not providing education to children. Schools in Malakal have been closed for several months because of the fighting. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, appealed the government in Juba earlier this month to relocate the South Sudan Army, which has been occupying schools in Unity, Upper Nile, and Jonglei State as base camps against the rebels. Upper Nile has seen some of the worst boots fighting between government and opposition forces. Before the conflict, oil fields in Upper Nile State produced about 200,000 barrels of oil per day, a critical part of South Sudan's oil industry, which had propped up the country's economy. Since the May ceasefire agreement between President Kiir and Riek Machar, the town has been relatively calm. But Jock is not optimistic about today's face-to-face meeting between President Kiir and Riek Machar.
I don't have any hope towards the talk of the president and president of the rebels. Because once they sign things, they don't fulfill their promise.
Head of UNMISS, Hilde F. Johnson, who traveled to Malakal to open a new UN protection site, says Mr. Kiir and Machar must commit to a lasting peace deal.
When they have tried to trust that now the stability is here, again a town is retaken, again it's retaken, they don't really trust that this is not going to happen again. So until they see complete peace over a long stretch of time, it seems that they don't really feel that they are safe.
Residents here say their only hope is for a lasting peace deal in Addis, especially now that they are at the mercy of the rainy season and were not able to plant crops earlier this year due to their fighting. For VOA News, I am Gumedev Surakarinj in Juba.
Authorities in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state say they will punish South Sudan Army members who deserted military bases at Mapel and Wawi in April. State officials vowed to protect citizens and former members of the SPLA who are in hiding. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
The State Minister of Local Government, John Urbano Madut, says despite of government's offer of amnesty, only a handful of soldiers who deserted at training camp at Mapel during tribal tensions in April have reported back to their base. According to Madut, an unknown number of the Iran soldiers is still at large are threatening local residents in Taban Payam along the Wau-Bazir road.
They have looted about 200 bags of wheat flour in Taban Payam, Wau County. They have hijacked major of wildlife forces in area between Taban in Wushari, Wau County. They have looted a number of cattle in Wadalala area, Juriva County.
Urbano's accusation could not be independently verified. Urbano also claimed there was a recent attempted attack on SPLA base at Farjala. Urbano says the government of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state will do what it can to fight security, including capturing and arresting rebel fighters.
The government of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state has decided to take critical and serious procedures against those criminals and outlaws and all those who found involved cooperating with them. The citizen, rather, should inform the authorities and the security organ about the suspicious movement of those criminals and their locations.
He did not specify what kind of punishment deserters face. Last week, the state received reinforcement of around 200 police officers from Juba to boost security in and around Wau Town, the capital of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. Following the shooting at Mapel training camp in April, elders from different communities in Wau assured residents that state authorities will not tolerate any tribal fighting. South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says he has no information about members of the South Sudan Army who have reportedly deserted in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. Urbano says despite the defections, hijacking and looting, the state remains calm. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the biggest donation so far to perform surgery on Kenyan woman suffering from fistula. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday, from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it right to forgive someone who has insulted you? Why or why not?
To me, based on my religious teachings, I should forgive. Definitely, you should forgive.
It depends, really. You can forgive them, yes. It usually depends with what the insult was. If it's something personal, you can just keep away from the person. But if it's something you can forgive, yes, you can forgive.
I think it depends on the insult. If it's something you can forgivable, maybe you can forgive, but sometimes it's hard to forgive when someone has insulted you. It depends. I think it depends on the insult.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The SPLM's acting secretary general says the party members who crossed over to the opposition are in the minority. Last week, 18 SPLM members of parliament announced at a press conference in Nairobi they have joined the opposition. Anito describes the defectors as opportunists. Philip Aleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Eto says the decision by the MPs to join the opposition will not affect SPLM work in parliament. She says four of the officials working at the SPLM secretariat, including former spokesman Yen Matthew and acting secretary for administration Duer Tudduer, defected because of personal interests. She says Duer was on a medical leave in Egypt when he decided to quit SPLM.
I was actually surprised to learn that, this same guy who was telling me he couldn't come because he was not well, to learn that he says this institution that has been supporting him is, led by a dictator. Who knows? Maybe while in Egypt, somebody offered him greener pastures, because I felt that now all the stakeholders of South Sudan are brought together to now look at what are important to bring peace and also to take the South forward.
She says the defection have been exaggerated in the media and will not tarnish the image of the SPLM or its leadership.
If you look at the MPs, out of 300 plus, you can count on your 10 fingers how many have gone. In any natural event, you have things like that happening. But the bulk of the population are here. They are supporting peace.
The members of parliament who rebel have accused tough SPLM leadership of corruption, nepotism, and bad governance. Ito admits there is corruption, but insists that even government institutions are not perfect.
It's not SPLM alone. This corruption, it is from down to up. How many people have you find not SPLM but as corrupt as anything? It is a disease like tribalism that we should all agree as a nation to deal with squarely. If you begin pushing it to SPLM, what are you doing as SPLM to address this? You are underestimating the problem.
Ito says all stakeholders at the feedstock in Addis will have to address issues of reform within the judiciary and police services in order to deal with people who have embezzled public funds. She says the current debate on federalism should wait until a final ceasefire is agreed to by all parties to the conflict.
Let us leave these divisions because we have brought our people together in the symposium, and that debate is very healthy. At least they didn't punch themselves, but it was real, it was hot. This is what should happen among us. This is civilization. When you debate, very hot, and in the end you build a consensus and a choice is made, then we accept that.
The top SPLM politician says her party will not make decisions based on the fate of MPs who have rebelled or defected, but will not rule out the possibility of replacing members who have joined the opposition. For BOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
There is a relief in store for women in Kenya who suffer from painful and often embarrassing obstetric condition called fistula. The Fistula Foundation, a U.S.-based organization dedicated to treating the condition, has announced it received $2 million grant to treat the condition in Kenya. The new program, called Action on Fistula, and funding is provided by pharmaceutical company Astellas Pharma Europe Limited. Katie Grant, the CEO of Fistula Foundation, tells VOA's Kim Lewis the funding will help treat 1,200 Kenyan women and could be a model for fistula treatment in other African countries.
Obstetric fistula is a childbirth injury. It's the result of unrelieved obstructed labor, the kind of labor that if women were giving birth in the United States or another industrialized developed country would likely have a C-section and she wouldn't end up with a fistula. But for millions of women that give birth at home without access to emergency obstetric care, this injury can result. It basically is an injury that leaves women incontinent. That's the bad news. The good news is, though, surgery in the hands of a literally trained surgeon, the holes that create the incontinence can be sewn up and the woman can be given back her health.
Tell us about this new program in Kenya, Action on Fistula.
We are so thrilled. We've just kicked off a partnership last month in May with Astellas Pharmaceutical out of Europe. And what it is we are going to be spending 1.5 million euros, which is a little over $2 million, over 3 years targeting to Kenya exclusively. And what we've got is really a three-pronged approach. One, we're going to be treating women with this injury. We hope to treat at least 1,200 women in that 3 years. We're going to be training fistula surgeons through FIGO, which is the French acronym for the International Federation of Gynecology and Obstetrics. And we're going to be pursuing really quite robust outreach efforts to encourage women that are living in remote rural areas that may not know that treatment exists and that treatment's available to them for free in this case, to seek treatment at facilities throughout Kenya. Part of the design of the program with both the robust outreach program as well as the surgeon training is that we will get more surgeons trained to confront this issue in coming years as well. So it's both the short term and the long term that we hope this program, Astellas Action on Fistula, will have an impact.
You talked about the physical aspects of the condition of fistula. What are some of the emotional and psychological effects of the condition?
The physical problem, incontinence, tends to unfortunately have far broader implications for a woman's mental health than one might suspect if you live in a developed country. Often these women are ostracized because of the leaking of bodily waste, urine and feces, sometimes feces, almost always urine, and without often hot running water and products that we would have in a developed country, depend pads or something like that to take care of it. The women, again, are too often ostracized, frequently left by their husbands. The hospital in Ethiopia that's done the most of these surgeries documents that 90% of the women that enter the hospital for treatment are clinically depressed, which is understandable if you've been left by a husband and ostracized by your community. But this is, again, where treatment can make all the difference because a woman that goes through treatment often is in a ward with other women with this injury, starts to feel not alone from the minute she gets there, but then also treatment itself leads to health and return mental health as well.
Though this program, Action on Fistula, focuses on women in Kenya, how will it help other women in developing countries?
Our hope, certainly, with this program is that it provides us a model where we've got results that we can measure and demonstrate to others so that we can use this sort of go deep model in a country beyond Kenya. what we do in Kenya and can serve as a model for us going deep with more resources, integrated surgeon training, outreach, and treatment.
That was Kate Gran, CEO of the Fistula Foundation, speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from San Jose, California. Tune in next Tuesday for more news on health information from VOA. Award-winning South Sudanese musician Mary Buyoya is spearheading a national effort to raise money for people affected by the conflict. The multi-purpose SOSA Award winner, including Female Artist of the Year in 2012, recently launched the effort at a concert in Juba. As Mungume Debs Rakaringe reports for VOA, several hundred attended the free concert.
Hundreds of Mary Buyoya fans turned up for the concert at Nyakron Cultural Center in Juba. Buyoya says she was moved to launch the effort after visiting a displacement camp in Lake State late last month.
I feel pity for them because they were under the trees, they have no mosquito net, and the malaria is there. And you know the malaria is not good with pregnant women. They have no even food to eat, so they might eat once per day.
Dot Atem was one of more than 200 people who attended the free concert. They were all asked to make donations, and he says he was happy to do so.
The reason why I came is that I thought this thing can help if I myself come here and went outside and tell other people that we need peace, all right? We need peace, and this is what we have been yearning for. That is why we fought for 21 years, simply to have peace and to have a nation that can prosper and develop like other countries.
Buyoya says she managed to raise £10,000, which will be donated to people living at the displacement sites. She says she plans to continue holding the concerts and asking for donations. She wants to raise at least £200,000 to help feed and shelter displaced people. She says music is the only way she knows how to do that.
Like if I want to reach the president of South Sudan, I cannot reach him in personal. I say, okay, you meet me. But if I send my message, he will still hear it. People will tell him that, oh, Mary Buyoya has sung a song like this, like this, like this. Music message is more powerful, more than talking. And it can communicate very fast.
Several other local artists showed up to lend Buyoya support. Rapper Johnson Mike from the group Boundless Empire was one of them.
You know, when you play music and you begin to hear the beat and the message, you start to think, it forces you to focus on the message that that person is singing. If it is a peace artist singing about peace, you'll begin to think about peace.
It is not known when or where the next concert will be held, but Buyoya says she will announce it in advance. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinch in Juba.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with more music about peace. This one by WJ.
Now and forever. So, is that good? Yeah. WJ was. The king of Lokulili was. WJ was.
We have been listening to WJ with that song about Season of Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Season of Peace.